Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome, everybody.
Dan, are we allowed to use that?
Yeah, of course we are.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, totally. And it's this is a show that's all about new beginnings. This is Cinematica season number four.
And I've got a new name. Dandy Lion.
Dandy Lion.
I've got Dan the Lion.
He loves Dandy giving Lion. Out nicknames.
I got a nickname last night at netball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Danger Mouse.
Danger Mouse.
Yeah, and I won the MVP jacket on our team, so I'm just going to brag about that.
Brilliant. I'm deeply impressed with all of you. The other reason why we played that little tune at the beginning, because it's all about new beginnings, is that it was announced today that 20th Century Fox are changing their name to 21st Century Fox.
Yes, the parent company.
Yeah.
Yes, not the film distribution bit, but the overarching.
Yeah, but still, group. It won't be long before that logo changes.
No.
Yeah.
Well, didn't they use the logo as a joke for Futurama? Don't they do that?
Yeah, probably.
So.
But anyway, you know, times are
What's
changing.
What's his name? The 20th Century Fox girl. What's his name? Fox.
Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert. Yeah. Don't do it, Rupert.
Well, you know, times are changing. We're moving on. And
it's like we were just talking about before. It's winter, isn't it? And I'm starting. You know, Katie observed. I'm just feasting on this magnificent peanut butter chocolate mousse. And that's only because it's winter.
Yeah, it's comfort food, is it?
It's comfort. Yeah. Pies will be out soon. Have a pie with chips and gravy. It'll happen. And I always feel so ashamed, but it will happen.
I'm staring at this thing and I'm thinking, I can't believe you're even going to finish that while we're actually on
it's
air.
It's fantastic food.
I'm trying to be repulsed by it, so I don't want it. It's not working.
Winter, diabetes, man.
Don't rub it
on
in.
On a plate.
big reps to Catherine, thank you very much for that. It was nice.
Good stuff. All right, well, we should start the show, shouldn't we, I suppose?
Go on, I'm prepared.
You are, as usual. In today's episode, Tom Cruise plays another Jack, following on from Jack Reacher. Last year, this is the sci-fi epic Oblivion, in which he plays a character called Jack Harper. The Old East Germany is the setting for Christian Petzold's Barbara. Zombies are brought back to life by love in Warm Bodies, and we sneak preview our interview with the co-director, one of the co-directors of Contiki. So all that to look forward to. But first, Kaylee, you've been monitoring the mailbag.
Indeed. So from Reese Pie, one of our regular listeners in the UK, nearly 10 p.m. and they're still paying tribute to that woman in Parliament. Don't they know there's a new Cinematica cast to listen to?
Thank you.
I think
so true.
They probably have their headphones on, won't they? They have their little earphones for their podcasts.
Robert Caddo tweeted his two-word review for Oblivion: Planet No Apes.
Another of our international listeners.
What else? There's so many.
The Mirka. Did we get a two-word review from the Mirka for Oblivion as well?
Did we?
I wouldn't mind getting a written letter. Something on paper.
We got a two-word review for Warm Bodies.
Maybe that was it. Yep.
Two-word review from the Mirka: Warm Hearts. Mm-hmm. And from Miriam Ruth Ross: G.I. Joe Retaliation, Camp Nonsense.
Yep, and That she's such an expert in 3D, and yeah, she was actually quite impressed by the 3D. It was probably the only thing about that film that she was impressed by, actually. So that's excellent response from our listeners. Thank you very much. We're also looking for some ideas because this is the start of a new season of the show, and we've been following the same sort of routine.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah,
I think we should change. We should submit a piece of music for the end of the show every week from us or from our listeners.
Right.
So
it's not just me, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, fair enough. No, totally.
Yeah, I mean,
is it film related or is it like something we've produced ourselves?
I think.
call it for musicians.
It doesn't matter.
I think you need to sit down with your ukulele and give us a cover
of your favorite film song of the month.
Yep.
How about we get knockoff versions of music from films? So it has to be a different version.
Yeah.
Or karaoke tracks, and we have to sing it at the end of the show.
Oh, no. Now you're getting just silly. This is redonkulous.
Mm. Well, Lee Fleming had Lee Fleming had some better ideas. He said, more Bill Gosden, interview small theater owners, do more on unfolding realities of distribution, downloading, and digital.
So when he says small theater owners, does he mean owners of small theaters or
I think he means small theater owners. I'm quite tall. Stature.
I was going to say, because Richie Rich...
He's taller than me,
I think. In Auckland, is he?
No, is he short? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but he refused to appear on today's program because it's his birthday, apparently. Yeah. He was going to help us review Barbara. But actually, I don't even know if... He's not really into the modern technology, is he? I don't think he listens to the show anymore, so we can say pretty much whatever we want.
We can, I don't beg him.
And breaking news, this tweet just arrived right now from Genki Beth. Only you guys can break the monotony of my horrific afternoon of data entry. Thank you for being great. Thank you for being great.
Well, that's such a lovely thing to say. And I think that, I feel like we're blessed to have like the best quality, the highest quality listeners of any movie podcast in the Southern Hemisphere, probably, I would say. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be fair?
If not the world,
exactly. Yeah. But I'm hesitant about, making too many bold claims. So what have people been going to the movies to watch? Because it is winter, or feeling very much like winter, as Simon was saying, the weather has turned.
It's actually quite mild, but this thing was just screaming out to eat me. Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
So, what is our top five for this weekend? This is a loosey-goosey show, isn't it, already?
Oh, too much sugar.
You're waiting to speed up soon.
This is what happens when you say, let's record at 2 in the afternoon instead of 4 in the afternoon. It's like you've got too much energy.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Let's go.
At number 5, Scary Movie 5. Number 4, down from 2, Identity Thief.
How many people... Does it say how many dollars did Scary Movie 5 make on opening weekend to get to number 5? I think people should have to actually list their names and addresses as well.
It was close to 138,000.
Box office
dollars in New Zealand dollars.
It's not much, actually.
No.
Okay.
Opening at number 3, Warm Bodies.
Mm-hmm.
At number 2, The Croods, which has been sneaking for a couple of weeks,
had time to build some word of mouth. That's good.
Yes. And at number 1, Oblivion.
All right, Tom Cruise doing it again.
But Cruise is really... I mean, that's... To be honest...
Oblivion made almost half a million.
Yeah, no, that will do that. But, I mean, Cruise, for me, those 5 films, that's the one I'd see again.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's certainly got the most jokes per... Well, the most actual funny jokes per minute. The Scary Movie just throws a lot of jokes out, but none of them land, not a single one. It's really, really repulsive.
Did you just feel like you'd been in the ring and pummeled?
Someone sat on you and then farted on you.
Yeah, it's a little bit... It was,
that would be
all
funny,
of those,
though.
All of those things.
No, that's never funny.
One of the problems with it is that it's rated M, and so kids can go... But actually, a lot of the content is really there's a lot of sexual material in there,
which usually is. It's always the same joke.
I was sitting there thinking, like, with all of these, 11, 12 year old kids sitting around me, thinking this is really inappropriate. You know, like something about the ratings of these things is just not working. Mm. And I don't have kids, so maybe if I had kids, I would be happy that they were just sitting. Being supervised for a couple of hours while I could go and do something else, and maybe it wouldn't be a problem. But I just wonder, it's not the first time that I felt that one of those American edgy comedies has been rated to such an extent that, basically kids can go in and, have... Yeah, that doesn't seem appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. maybe we should talk to the ratings people and say what's going on. Because actually, here in New Zealand, they won't have, because it's an M, it won't have been screened for the census, because what we do here in New Zealand is we cross rate from Australia.
They still see it though. They still watch it.
No, they don't.
Yeah,
no.
They do.
No.
Yeah.
Only if a film is rated M or above in Australia.
Yeah, okay.
So anything that's rated PG in Australia just gets cross-rated through.
But they're a wild bunch in Australia.
Exactly. But the assumption is that in the UK ratings and the Australian ratings will be equivalent to ours, because the community standards will be similar. So, and this is just because.
So is it cheaper to get a film rated that's been rated in Australia?
Only if it's rated M or below, I think. So it's anything
cheaper.
Anything with a restriction, they don't have to see them. And of course, there are distributors who, when they bring documentaries into the country, just automatically assume that it's going to be exempt and don't bother getting it rated at all. That still happens, which is not actually quite legal.
Yeah, that was always a bit funny because I came to New Zealand to work for the film festival, as many listeners may not know. And then just stuck around, but that was always strange to me. Seems like they would sometimes rate a film and sometimes leave it, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's because
judgment call, I guess,
and it's very much a user pays environment for to get films rated, and it's one of the obstacles, in fact, to distributors actually bringing films into the country, smaller films or festival films, because we're talking about many hundreds of dollars to get a film rated. And if you're bringing something in for maybe only one or two screenings, then, you know, there's a very good possibility you won't actually make enough money at the box office to cover the rating certificate. So it is, and I know that a lot of distributors and a lot of people in the home video business are very are pushing to try and get some flexibility in that environment, just to make it more affordable to bring films into the country.
And those little stickers they put on posters, also kind of expensive.
Mm. Yeah, and or nowadays they email them to you, so you print them out yourself. That is, are they doing that?
Well,
they email you the certificate, but not the shiny sticker with the stickers. Yeah, those are pricey.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe they should host more fundraisers. You know, cut down on costs.
Well, it is. It is one of the costs, you know, the hidden costs. And I think there are a lot of people, film fans, who don't, you know, we've talked about quite a few aspects of the industry on this show, that we're hopefully illuminating for film fans, that it's not just, you know, a walk in the park to bring a film into the country and stick it up on a cinema screen. You know, there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through and a lot of costs that you have to bear. And I know that we've been bitching about certain distributors not bringing out films that we would love, but you know they're much closer to the costs.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they know, and they're much closer to the stats about what films have made in the past. So, you know, generally speaking, I would say that if a distributor chooses not to release a film in New Zealand, it's because they will have run the numbers on it.
I suspect as well that part of the thinking in that is that it depends on how much of the film they own. Like, you know, at what? Yeah. I mean, is it just theatrical? Do they not have the DVD? You know, like, there's all that stuff that comes into the mix as well, not just the theatrical release, which I think a lot of people always just think about, but it's actually quite often the whole package. You know, they might be prepared to take a hit at one end if they know they're going to make
it. And this is something that maybe we should be talking to an independent distributor and just ask them how they cover those costs, because there are theatrical is often treated really as a way of launching or announcing a film.
It's marketing.
Yeah, so that it'll actually make you money at home video, or selling it to Air New Zealand to be played on in-flight or
Rialto Channel, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you really try and cover all of your costs.
Streaming.
Not that there's any money to be made there,
no.
Of course.
Hey, have you seen the Hunger Games Catching Fire trailer?
I sat there refreshing my browser until it unlocked yesterday.
Whoa.
I was in a cold sweat waiting to see that.
Isn't it? What did you think?
I thought it was a very clever trailer.
Yeah.
I have to say, they didn't give much away.
Got
it's
me
really
excited.
Just the
It's a teaser, isn't it?
It's a teaser, and they didn't go much into the story or what happens. They really just stuck to the kind of first opening chapters of the book. So right. It's good. It was
when's
good.
When is it due out? How long?
Oh, that's like
November 21st.
Yeah, November, something like that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. No, it's a wee ways off. But wow, you know, it really does look like it's going to pack a punch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you can't get too silly about trailers, but I love it when you get one and it just goes, touches, you know, pushes all the right buttons. You know, I'm excited about this.
Talking of trailers, there's a flood of trailers at the moment. We can talk a little bit about this during the news, but it's CinemaCon in Las Vegas at the moment, and of course the major studios are releasing a whole lot of teaser material and previews of their big summer blockbuster movies for the US, and so a lot of those trailers that they're screening at CinemaCon and then they're going straight online, and apparently the new Star Trek trailer is a pretty flash piece of work as well. Talking of flash pieces of work,
Oblivion.
Touch wood.
60 years ago, Earth was attacked. We won the war, but they destroyed half the planet. Everyone's been evacuated. Nothing human remains. We're here for drone repair with a mop-up crew.
I've been watching you, Jack. You're curious. What are you looking for in those books? Do they bring back old memories?
We have an unidentified impact.
Don't ask too many questions.
They are human.
This is ordering you to return to Tower.
Jack, how do you know my name?
Tom Cruise, thank you for giving us the plot summary so I don't have to do much of a rundown there. I will just to give you an idea about what this film is about. This is a set in many years in the future. Tom Cruise plays basically Wally cleaning up the planet after most human beings appear to have left it, and they're on their way to Titan. And what other films does this rip off?
Where's Titan then?
I'm making a list. Actually, I'm writing down my list right now.
Yeah.
And, of all the films I can think of
that
I saw.
That wouldn't be very nice, though, would it?
He talks to at one point he talks to a computer that's basically a red circle.
I haven't seen that before.
He's stuck outside the pristine white apartment that he shares with his co-worker, and she won't let him in, and that was very sort of open the pod bay doors hell, that little moment.
Well, is he not to be trusted?
You have to watch it to find out.
You do. Here's the thing.
Is he a bit of a womanizer?
Well, let me take a step back. No, he's not really. He's not much of anything, to be honest, because his memory, he and his co-worker, their memories were wiped 6 years previously for no apparent reason. And their job is to basically clean up the Earth, ready to join the rest of the human race on the flight to Titan.
Not just clean up the Earth, but basically take whatever valuable resources are remaining and turn them into energy for
the flight.
Why you would clean it up if you're leaving.
Well, they've got... Well, he's not so much cleaning it up. What he's doing is he's fixing, maintaining the drones who are protecting these massive machines that are sucking the last remaining oceans up into the atmosphere. And because there are still some stragglers in terms of the alien race that tried to invade us. There are still a few, they call them scavs. And apparently we won the war.
Destroyed the Earth.
Yes, but there's still a few of these rat bags around, and they're trying to prevent us from leaving. Anyway.
Scavs, so, it's kind of like, are they, you know, like union people or something?
In Thatcherite terms, yeah, purely Thatcherite terms. They're definitely evil. But this is the other thing: is they actually look like predators from the Predator movie, because they're basically like big black guys with dreadlocks, right? So rubber dreadlocks, and so there's so many of the elements of this film, including the action sequences. There's a sort of dogfight between two drones and Cruise's spaceship through the canyons, which is very Star Warsy. I talked to somebody the other day who said that this isn't a ripoff of all of those films. It's an homage to all of the great science fiction.
It's also based on a graphic novel.
Yeah, that doesn't
apparently.
Yeah, and maybe the graphic novel was an homage to all this great science fiction of the 70s, because it's 70s and 80s, actually, because you've got Predator, you've got 2001, you've got Star Wars. And I mean, but there's nothing original in it, is there? You know, we've seen it all before. Mm. And so on that basis, if you're going to go and enjoy it, you're really relying very heavily on Cruise himself, aren't you? And what do you reckon, Kaylee? Are you a Cruise fan?
I'm not really a Cruise fan. I was interested in seeing this because there was rumors that this film and also the End of the World film that Will Smith is starring in have Scientology undertones. So I actually was looking forward to like searching these out. Didn't really have any. The kind of conspiracy theorists, I think, will be disappointed.
Well, I mean, without going into spoilers, you've got to tread a little bit carefully, but there is a sort of element of being sort of indoctrinated by by the aliens, and you know, having your mind controlled.
Yes, so because it stars Tom Cruise, it would be pro Scientology, more of the telling of the story behind it. But I'm sure this movie was Scientology approved because Tom is in it. I was transfixed through the whole film. I was interested. I was geeking out, looking, kind of making this list in my head of all these things that I had seen before and the way they were replicating it. So yeah, not original, but entertaining. So if you like sci-fi, could be a good watch. It doesn't. It is 2 hours. I was worried it would
felt every minute of it, actually. Yeah.
It went by it was fairly smooth for me. Mm. But again, I was sort of like, oh, yeah. Oh, there's that. Oh, there's that.
Right. It is really well made. I will give. It's directed by Joseph Kosinski, written and directed by Joseph Kosinski, based on his own graphic novel, as you pointed out earlier on. And he was responsible for the Tron reboot, which wasn't the flashiest film in the world.
But disappointing.
He does have great command of the effects and how to make the effects work and how to make these worlds seamless, these digital worlds seamless. Yeah. I spent quite a lot of it. You were looking for Scientology. I was looking for green screen. And I couldn't find any, you know, you know how sometimes you can look at a landscape and you can see the painting, you know, that some artist has done beautifully. I couldn't see the seams in any of the effects in this. It's like a new high watermark for me in terms of creating a world and seamlessly integrating. Because you know that like 99% of that film would have been shot indoors in front of a giant green screen. Couldn't tell. So on that basis, it's really worth looking for. And the soundtrack's really good. And
he knows how to click into good techno music for sci-fi films.
Yeah, and in
I'll
terms,
give him that much. Whoever
yeah, so, you, so you, it's state of the art in lots of ways. I just wish that it had gone a little bit further forward, you know, rather than looking backwards. I have to say, probably the big comparison in terms of modern movies is Prometheus, and you know, it didn't get as much hype as that, and it's benefited a lot from, you know, sort of turning up rather than having months and months of breathless anticipation. And if I'm allowed to use a little bit of profanity, it doesn't sort of disappear up its own backside to quite the same degree that Prometheus does. So it's, you know, it's a bit easier to sort of stomach on that basis. But you know, I just find that Cruise is so flat and so dull these days.
I liked him in Reacher. I didn't mind him at all in that. I thought he was good.
No, I can't see the acting. He's a flat thing that you project your own.
Yeah, see, I wasn't convinced he had, okay, slight spoiler here, not much of a spoiler though. I couldn't be convinced that he would have like a 19-year-old Russian wife.
19.
Or no, she's not 19. I think it's specifically somewhere that she's 22. I think it's specifically in the synopsis.
Right.
Yeah, well, and as just if for people interested in this, we can put this link in the in the show notes, but Adzabil, who is a regular listener to the show, does actually have on his own personal website a survey of Tom Cruise's age and the age of the women in his films. So you can see that while his age goes up in a pretty much in a straight line.
But that's Hollywood, though, isn't it? I mean, that's not Tom Cruise as such.
You can say that, but this is science, Simon.
I know, but it's kind of like, well,
Tom Cruise has enough star power to say who.
Sure,
you know,
it's pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
the leading lady would be.
It's 34. I think it's pretty much because he's 50 now, and I think pretty much his leading ladies now will stop at 34. That's.
Mm. And how is that any different to 40 years ago?
Well, you know, yeah. This is the stats, man.
Look at John Wayne or Clark Gable. They look old geezers. They were old, and they were surrounded by young fillies. I mean, that's not it's not unusual at all.
Well, I just think that Cruise should be set. It should be a little bit more of a what's the word? He should be setting an example, frankly, to
older gentlemen.
So you want to see more middle-aged people in action films?
Well, I mean, Bruce is 60, isn't he now? You'll notice that there was no romance for Bruce in the last Die Hard, you know. So just didn't even bother.
He wasn't even romanced by the film.
How often is he? I mean, any of his Die Hard films, how romantic are they?
The early one,
he had a wife who was kind of like, you know. Yeah.
It's about getting forward. And the second one. Anyway, we're diverging.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Oblivion. This is a film that
it's no different though, I've got to say though. You got to sit in pubs like big, you know, near the financial centres, and you see the same kind of demographic.
The age differences.
I'd just like to point out.
So it's just about the money then. Cynic.
Anyway, there you go.
We all look at Kaylee as if she's going to give us some clues.
Ian's like 9 years my senior. So.
Okay. And is he still? Is he basically still pointing at you whenever anybody asks advice about movies? That was last week's.
Last week I brought it up on the show that he does this, and now I want to describe to our listeners what actually happens, because this happened Saturday night. A friend asked him if there's any good movies out or any movies that he should watch. Ian stops, looks at me, takes his left hand, takes his pointer finger and puts it on his nose, takes his pointer finger on his right hand and points directly at me across the bar and says, "Talk to her. She knows. She reviews films."
Romance. Yeah. We need to get a t-shirt, don't we? With that very image on it. Okay, Oblivion. Two words. Let's try and sum up $100 million worth of film in
two words.
My two-word review is sci-fi casserole. And I'm going to put a challenge out to our listeners to tweet us or put on our Facebook page. If you have seen Oblivion, how many film references can you list? How many films that you've seen? I've made a list here just while we're talking. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Okay,
that's not really even thinking that hard.
See if you can beat 7. There we go. Yeah. That's a challenge.
And your two words, Dan?
Might be able to find a prize. Mine are Nothing New, which is not a million miles away from Kaylee's judgment there. Talking of new stuff, this is new.
Das ist Frau Dr. Wolf. Sie arbeitet ab heute hier bei uns in der Kinderchirurgie.
Und wenn Sie mich bald abholen, kannst du irgendwas für mich tun, Frau Doktor? Ich kann nicht nach Torgau zurück. Ich halte es dann nicht aus.
Können Sie was für Stella machen? Kove ist eine Vernichtungsanstalt.
Oh, Nina Hoss in Barbara, which is a film that we've been waiting quite a while for it to turn up here in New Zealand. It was in the festival last year, and this was I didn't get to see it until Telluride, which was September last year, and I watched it there, and I did wonder whether it was the kind of film that would actually get a release in New Zealand, because it's quiet. It's very dramatic. I wondered whether there were, apart from maybe that the fact that a film called The Lives of Others did really good business here a few years ago, which was about a similar sort of East German paranoia and the police state sort of environment. I just wondered whether this was a film that was actually going to get a New Zealand audience, and I'm really pleased that Mad Men have taken the punt and brought it out, because there's a lot of real strengths to this film. It's beautifully directed. It builds its tension really, really well. And it's there's a central performance from Nina Hoss, who has got a fantastic reputation in Germany, but isn't necessarily as well known internationally as she should be. She plays the title character, Barbara. I'm just going to do a bit of a rundown of this because I'm looking at you guys and saying, has anybody else seen this film?
No, sorry.
Okay, well,
you're solo today. Sorry.
Okay, well, we won't take too long. Anyway, she plays this character, Barbara, who is a doctor, and she's got into trouble in the East. This is set in sort of the early 80s. She's got into trouble with the authorities, and she's basically been banished into the country away from the city. And she's got into trouble because she's basically helping the resistance, helping the people who are anti-government. And the question is, has she learned a lesson, and has she decided to cease all that sort of political involvement, or is she quietly still trying to support those people who want to sort of overthrow the regime? And it takes a while for you to work out exactly what it is that she's doing and how it's working, because she's so burnt by the experience with the government before that she won't make friends in the new doesn't want to make friends in the new environment. She's mistrustful of everybody she sees. Everybody's potentially an informer, and so it takes a while for even us, the audience, to understand exactly what it is going on. And of course, as a doctor, you know that she's not going to be completely closed off to humanity and to the needs of the people around her, and she's going to get drawn out of herself and into the lives of the people in the community. And does that mean she's going to risk the whatever it is that she's trying to do? And is there a chance of romance with the handsome young doctor who may or may not be on her side? So there's a lot to wrestle with. But it's beautifully handled, and if you appreciated a film like The Lives of Others, where there's that sort of constant level of tension that's going on, I think you'll get a big kick out of Barbara as well.
It seems to be compared on a regular basis to Lives of Others. I mean, is that a fair thing to do?
I just don't think we've got another equivalent, really. You know, it's set in a similar sort of time frame, although The Lives of Others was about the people doing the watching, whereas this is much more about the people who are on the other side of it being watched. And you get a real sense that, you know, nobody is to be trusted, nobody is quite who they seem, but that even the watchers still end up having sort of their own secret lives and their own their own dramas and dramatic situations to be recognised. I was, saw this film at Telluride in September, and Christian Petzold, the director, was there to introduce it and to do a Q&A afterwards. And for those people that are going to see the film, which I hope includes the two of you, he described what happened in the final scene. And without telling you what actually happens plot-wise, I'll tell you, he explained to us, the audience, he said, for that final scene, he said, I totally trusted the actors to know their characters, to know exactly what was going on. So basically, I left the room, and he said, I just left the camera running, and he and they did the performance. He said, I didn't see what they did until we watched the rushes the next day. And he just trusted that they would give a better, truer performance in that final in the final scene without the crew, him, all of the paraphernalia. So he basically just set up the camera, left the room, shut the door, and said, "Go for it," which I thought was just a fascinating level of trust in your cast and in their ability to get under the skin of their characters. So, you know, that's a sign of somebody who's really got an interesting and quite an exciting approach to screen drama. So I hope people get to see it and seek it out. Is it going all that wide?
No, but I think it's playing in the right places, and it seems to be playing quite nicely. Yeah,
good. Well, that's a recommendation, and my two words is a stunning performance, and that relates to Nina Hoss, the lead in Barbara. So time for some news now.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
CinemaCon is in full swing in Las Vegas, and all the big studios are doing their best to woo exhibitors from all over the U.S. and the world. Cinema owners and some critics have seen sneak previews of Michael Bay's bodybuilding comedy Pain and Gain, starring The Rock and Mark Wahlberg, as well as extended previews of the new Star Trek and World War Z.
Or Z.
I guess, yeah, it would be Z if you're in the States.
I read some stuff about Pain and Gain, and
it looks so good.
It does look really interesting, but it's also really relatively low budget for Michael Bay. You know, Michael Bay, 4 Transformers movies and all of the rest of it, hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, this one, the budget of only 29. And
I can't imagine there'll be much CG in it, though.
You don't really need to pump any of those guys up, do you?
No, artificially. I'm sure there'll be car explosions. There'll be like DeLoreans blowing up or something, but. You know.
But still interesting for somebody like Michael Bay to, it's like a little passion project or something. Mm. It's like, you know, deciding to go a little bit indie.
I wonder how much of that budget was protein shakes for the actors.
Yeah, true.
Mm.
Oh, they'd have a sponsor for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, CinemaCon, Si, is the exhibitors conference in the US, and it's the equivalent to the conference that you go to at Surface, which is for Australasia.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the exhibitors and various invited media and what have you, they sit in a state-of-the-art movie theatre, and they get trailers, 20-minute extracts from films. They get the
goodie
studios.
Bags.
Yeah, the
Can you get us invited?
Hey, look, you know, I'll go to CineCon before anyone else.
As media?
Yeah.
We can be like the one.
I think, you know, like the thing with those types of conferences is that they're a sales pitch. And so there's a massive, I mean, speaking to some of the guys who've been across for that, it's huge. I mean, we're not used to it here. And the scale of it is enormous. But, you know, you get all the big stars turning up, really promoting their films. So it is quite exciting from that point of view. But at the end of the day, it is probably, you know, it's a sales pitch by the distributors
and
for their
lineups. From your point of view, do those sorts of things make a difference? Like when you're programming your theatre, does it make a difference in terms of the number of sessions you give a film or choosing to go for a film that maybe you wouldn't have?
Definitely. I mean, I think, I remember seeing Senna at a conference before overseas, and I saw it overseas, and I was like, yeah, no, this is something that we've really got to get into, and I you know, it does get you enthused, it does get you planning, it does get you thinking about how you're going to release titles, what marketing can you do, and what angles can you take. So it is very useful from that point of view. And
the other kind of interesting thing about this particular conference now is, with the benefit of the internet, that this is now part of not just the sales strategy, but the marketing strategy behind these big movies. Because
it is, and it must be high stakes for a lot of that. I mean, you think back to last year when The Hobbit got a little sneak at CinemaCon, and, you know, the knives were out for a little bit there. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
So it was
a year ago, wasn't it?
So it does have its risks when they release certain content. It's so funny now how I guess the studios have changed in the sense that, you know, they'll do that and then they'll be monitoring the Twitter sphere and Facebook and all that sort of stuff.
They'll be watching the counters on, you know, the YouTube clips.
It's not just, say, putting on a screening for an audience, you know, a random audience, and getting their feedback. You know, there's so much more that's going on. And I don't know how much weight you should really give that stuff sometimes. You know, Prometheus is a good example.
Mm. Well, yeah, I think last year I felt really strongly like last year we got played a lot. We got played with Prometheus. We got played with Looper.
In what way was Looper played? I mean, just the lead up.
Just in terms of the build up and the anticipation. Yeah. You know, sometimes these films don't actually, that they should just stand on their own two feet.
Yeah, and you should be surprised. I think, you know, you're getting to see all the goodies before, you know, it's kind of like,
it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's almost, like when Man of Steel comes out, there won't be very much that we haven't seen about Man of Steel already. We've had the suit revealed. There's a video now with General Zod, the villain. You know, there's not going to be much in that film that we haven't already had revealed. And does that? It's a hard thing from a marketing point of view. Does the pleasure of going to a movie increase with the anticipation, or does it actually decrease with the amount that you've, the amount of surprise that you miss out on? It's, it must be really hard from a marketing perspective to know and how to balance that.
And is it really effective? You know, and we were talking about getting younger audiences. Is it really effective to give them that much information to draw them in?
Well, it's funny because you look at, I mean, we were talking before about the Hunger Games, and I would say that that works for that film, that you will create a lot of momentum and marketing and buzz, you know, like we're already kind of excited because we've seen a little bit.
But they're not going to do, but they're not going to do anything else for a few months, though.
No, they're probably not. Yeah. No, they're not. You're right. But I do think that it's a double-edged sword. It can really, and at the end of the day, isn't it just about how strong the film was on its own? You can, and what people don't like is feeling played. Yeah. And I guess, you know, your point is valid. Like with Prometheus, people felt like they were played, that it wasn't actually all it was meant to be. In fact, you know, I mean, all the hype wasn't justified.
But
so,
yeah, this was a year where we thought, where we were wondering whether the whether we were going to have those sort of big tentpole movies, you know, and yet here we are. We're a week away from Iron Man 3. We've got Man of Steel coming, and so you know, there seems to be quite a lot actually of those big summer movies. There's no shortage of them.
No, I mean, you've got The Hangover 3 in there as well. I mean, you've got quite a lineup in the next few weeks.
Just out of interest, there was some box office information that came out over the weekend about Oblivion, because of course it hasn't opened in the US yet. It's just had international, and the international opening weekend for Oblivion was less than for John Carter. Which was interesting, more than Battleship, but less than John Carter. So just interesting, by about $10 million actually, $10 million US.
And yet, I think
it'll still go gangbusters.
Well, from what you're saying, though, Oblivion's a better film than John Carter.
Yeah, marginally. Exactly. And this is the thing, is you just hope that Tom Cruise will sort of push it over the push it over the edge. But it just goes to show that John Carter wasn't that big a disaster in the end.
But that was relative to cost. I mean, what did that cost versus Oblivion?
True. Exactly.
So,
all right.
Yes, the news.
Somewhere else. Speaking of hype and Hunger Games, award season is still limping along as the MTV Movie Awards were announced on Tuesday. Cinematica is pleased to report that Taylor Lautner from Twilight won the coveted Best Shirtless Performance for 2012, and also Emma Watson won the Trailblazer Award or something for her role in Perks Being a Wallflower.
Yeah. Right.
So yay for her. Yeah. And also, and the other big thing about the movie awards was the Catching Fire trailer was released at the end, and I was really excited to see the new trailer, sitting there refreshing, waiting for it to be released. But the buzz on Twitter was insane. People were just tweeting in all caps, waiting for the trailer, because of course they left it till the very end of the ceremony, and people wanted to see it. And all those angry tweens on Twitter. It was so intense.
Oh my goodness.
Thank goodness it's Wednesday.
It's a Twitter jungle out there.
It is.
You're better off out of it, to be honest, because you know, it'll just suck you in.
And Twitter's permanent, isn't it? Once it's out there, it's out there.
It's quite hard to find stuff, not impossible, but generally speaking, I wouldn't say that it's totally permanent. You've got to really dig to find some of the old stuff.
Yeah, Facebook is much more permanent.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, just so you know.
What have you been tweeting?
Okay,
I need you to show me how to do that, Kaylee.
It's a Wednesday. This is Wednesday is the day we're recording. Most of you will be listening on Thursday, and which is the opening day of the New Zealand Film Festival's Autumn Events Program. If you want to know more about that, you can go back to our last episode where we chatted to Bill Gosden. Was it last week or the week before?
No, it was prior. It was the week before. Prior, 2 weeks ago.
Well, just keep go back and listen to
all. Yeah,
exactly. And he'll tell you more about the Auckland and Wellington Autumn Events program. But one of the features that is featuring in the Autumn Events is Kon-Tiki, which is a Danish-Norwegian co-production about Thor Heyerdahl's momentous 1948 rafting trip from Peru to the Pacific, across the Pacific to the Pacific Islands and to Polynesia. And this is a film that's going to be coming out a little bit later on and the movies, but this is an opportunity for people to see it in Auckland on Saturday evening at the Civic, on the massive Civic screen, and it'll also be playing on Saturday night at the Paramount in Wellington. So some sneak previews, I guess, of that. The distributors of the film very kindly put me in touch with one of the directors, Espen Sandberg. It's directed by two people, Espen Sandberg and Joachim Ronning, and I spoke to Espen on Saturday morning. Here's a little extract from that interview. We'll play the whole thing when the film actually gets a full release, but here's just a little bit of a taster of it. I was asking Espen about their decision to shoot the film on the ocean rather than in a tank.
Yeah, we did, and everybody advised against that, but we were very lucky. His grandson, Olav Heyerdahl, he built another raft in 2006, the Tangaroa, and he made the same voyage. He drifted from Peru to Polynesia, so he's almost as crazy as his grandpa. And we got to use that raft, that very raft, and just modified it slightly so it was an exact replica of the original Kon-Tiki. And Olav came with us, and he learned the actors how to sail it. And we wanted it to be real. We wanted to get as close to the, you know, the truth as we could possibly get. And it was just amazing for the actors and amazing for us. It made for some magical moments out there.
It sounds a little bit like you were just as obsessed as Tor.
Well. Not us, but yeah, pretty obsessed. We knew that this was a great story, and we wanted to get it right. And the actors were very, very sporty, and so was the crew. So we fought really, really hard to get it right, basically. And we did have also spent a little bit of time in the tank, and that was because we had to shoot the night scene. When we were on land. And the reason for that was that we shot in Malta in the Mediterranean, and this was while the war was going on in Libya, and that's a neighboring country of Malta, so we were not allowed to be out on the ocean at night.
And Kon-Tiki opens around New Zealand on the 16th of May.
What am I doing with my life? I just want to connect. Why can't I connect with people? All right. It's because I'm dead. I wish I could introduce myself, but I don't remember my name. I think it started with an R, but that's all I have left. It's kind of a bummer. I shouldn't be so hard on myself. I mean, we're all dead. This is my best friend. We even have almost conversations sometimes.
Kaylee, you're our zombie correspondent for the day. Warm Bodies, what did you make of this one?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I can't even contain my excitement right now. Okay, so Warm Bodies is based on the novel of the same name by Isaac Marion. Mm-hmm. And it's about a young gentleman zombie. There has been some sort of zombie apocalypse outbreak.
Plague.
He's not quite sure what happened, so we get around the whole awkward creating a backstory.
And, yeah, exactly. It. And it allows them to create their own sort of rules, doesn't it? Around
exactly.
It. So you don't have to necessarily buy into the whole all of the rigid sort of rules around what does and doesn't constitute a zombie.
Yes, and so
these are slow ones as well. Which helps.
Yes, they are slow. They're slow zombies, but they're smart zombies, which we have seen before in the name of the film. I can't remember right now, which is terrible because I wrote my thesis about it in university. So he's wandering about. There are human survivors who are obviously trying to take back America and
or Montreal, as the case
yes,
may be.
Yes, Montreal. And he falls in love with a human and through the power of love starts to heal himself and those around him. And it is a lovely, lovely rom-zom-com.
It's a technical term.
It's a technical term.
Nice.
that was coined 9 years ago
rom-zom-com.
For Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And if there has been other rom-zom-coms out there, listeners, please let me know. But I believe this is only the second that we've seen so far.
And this is also, whereas Shaun of the Dead enjoyed and reveled in its zombiness, in that there was plenty of blood, plenty of gore, lots of frights. Lots of cricket bats. This is a film that I think tones down the horror aspect so that it's a little bit more palatable to younger audiences. Mm. I think it's definitely pitching at that sort of 14 plus rather than, if you're going thinking it's going to be a zombie movie with romance, it's definitely the other way around, isn't it?
It is, definitely. And it reignited my passion for Zombie Academia, which is great. Has some fantastic Canadian artists in it as well, which if you're familiar with the music, you'll hear it. If not, then you should definitely get the soundtrack. The soundtrack is awesome. And I absolutely loved it, every second of it. It was awesome. And I really like Nicholas Holt. He's been acting since he was like teeny, teeny, tiny. And he's just great in this.
Yeah, so we've got a movie here that was shot in Canada, stars an English actor and an Australian actress all pretending to be American, which seems to be the way of these things, doesn't it, at the moment.
His best friend, the name of the actor I cannot recall right now, but he's great. He's one of those actors you see in everything but don't know who he is, but he puts in these fantastic performances.
I'm just looking it up at the moment.
Yeah. You wouldn't know his name, but you're like, I've seen that guy before, and he's great. And he is...
Rob Corddry.
Yes, he is exceptional in this. He has some amazing one-liners.
Yeah, he is. He's probably the best performance in the whole thing, actually. Mm. Also really good is Anna Lee Tipton as the best friend of Julie, the object of R's affection. So, like, pretty much pretty well cast all the way down the line.
And you can't forget John Malkovich as the father / head of the zombie rebellion.
This is a film written and directed by Jonathan Levine, who some of you may know from a film a few years ago that slipped out into cinemas here called The Whackness, which was a sort of New York coming-of-age story, which showed that he's got a really sort of deft touch for romance and for an unusual spin on stories that we think we've seen over and over again, which is really good. He also made 50-50, which didn't come out at the movies, but I was... There was one, I don't know, probably distributed by Roadshow, that they probably should have. So there we go, Jonathan Levine, a name to conjure with. So Warm Bodies, that's definitely, as long as you're not expecting too much blood and too much gore and too much fright, I think people will get a big kick out of it.
So, and I think it adds something really, really great to the zombie genre. It's a little bit fresh, it's a little bit new, and it's nice. It's a light zombie film.
So, all right, two words.
My two words, aside from must see, are Undead Dreamboat.
Okay. My two words for Warm Bodies are bloody schmaltz. And that's now that we were going to do one more film, actually, and it was going to be not the new Woody Allen, but the Woody Allen before last, which is finally hitting cinemas at the moment. It's called You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger. But basically, I've decided that I want to erase the whole experience from my memory. And I just want to feel like, if I look at the Woody Allen canon, I don't want to see it on IMDb when I look at that list of credits. I don't want to see it in his biography. I'd rather have my image of Mr. Allen preserved as somebody who made
Annie Hall,
Manhattan, or good films. I mean, this isn't one of those serious Woody Allen films. This is a comedy Woody Allen film, but it's got no jokes in it. So it's sort of the worst of all possible worlds.
They still want to work for him, though, don't they?
Yeah, well,
and the lineups he gets,
exactly, and that's the main reason for this film to exist. Actually, is because is the cast, right? And you look at the names on the poster and the photos and what have you, you think, oh, that'll be good. But unfortunately, they all look as if they don't know why they're there or what they're doing or how it all relates to each other. It's a shambles, frankly, and it's not even relieved by some decent gags. So big disappointment, that one. If you like Woody Allen, go and do something else. That, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. It's another big week next week. America is under attack in the first of the White House is Invaded by Terrorists films of the year. It's called Olympus Has Fallen. Opens in Australia tomorrow as well. We're sending Kaylee to Evil Dead. So she has...
Good job.
Oh, I'm scared.
Well,
the first one, the original one isn't scary because it's so bonkers and like ridiculous.
I think it depends on what age you see it.
No,
I remember seeing
that
being pretty scared of it.
Apparently two 500-gallon barrels of blood used during the making of Evil Dead 1 in Auckland.
I do have a date for it, so...
And I heard that you were going on a retreat, so we thought we'd actually send you with a really good reason for going on a retreat.
Sorry.
So
I'm
need
traumatized.
The weekend to recover.
I'm traumatized, and I can yoga myself out of it.
Yoga.
Yoga.
Oh, yoga. Okay.
And there is a possibility we might be able to reveal all about Iron Man 3, but who knows? We need to check on the key situation.
Might have to record it a bit later.
Yeah, we might just have to record a little bit later. So Iron Man 3. So a bit of a blockbustery week next week.
The beginning of the run, isn't it?
It is, yeah, definitely. Leading right up through the American summer through 4th of July. All that and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. Please, if you like the show, click subscribe in iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, because it does actually help push us to the top of the rankings and keep us on that front page. We are still on the front page of the movie, TV and movie section of iTunes in New Zealand. If you're in Australia or the UK, it would be really cool if you could give us a rating and review, because we're not showing up on their site. I mean, you can find us, but we're not showing up, really. So that would be good. Kaylee, how can people get in touch with their suggestions for features for the show?
You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd as Cinematica, and of course on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
Cool bananas. This show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music, playing you out with M83. They feature in two of this week's soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird how these things sort of happen that way? They're all over Oblivion. They actually basically wrote and produced the Oblivion soundtrack, but they also contribute one track to Warm Bodies.
Which is an amazing track.
This is Midnight City from the 2011 album Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. Until next week, that's all from me.